Welcome, everyone. I'm Miss Darlene, and I'm so thrilled you're here. Hi, everybody. Can you all say hello? Oh, you're good boys and girls. I am so glad you're here. How many of you were with me at STS a little while ago with the former? Any of you here? Okay, so you're going to have to endure me again. I goofed last time, and I've been doing this for a number of years for Larry. I didn't open in prayer. God, I know. That's just terrible. Isn't it nice that God forgives? My green hair did it. That's what did it. This is strictly children's ministry. I'll do anything for kids, even St. Patrick's things. So, top of the morning to all of you. I love you. I'm an Irish. I'm a McManigal from the clan of Donegal. I could very quickly go into the Irish, but I won't. Let's open in prayer. I'm going to ask Denise to open us, and then I will close us. All right? And just anything that's on your heart, we're here to learn more about relationships, which is, I guess, the number one thing with kids, right? And people and adults. Let's go to prayer.
Lord, I just want to thank you for this time that we have and we set aside in our busy lives, Father, to just come to you and to learn how we can be a vessel to teach these children about your love, Father. Just speak to us. We want to thank you for Darlene today, over the words and she's going to give us, and the ministry she's going to give us to help us do the best we can for each one of our children. We have at home, we meet in our lives and in our ministry, Father. Again, just have us listen to the words that Darlene is about ready to teach, and may we use them throughout our lives, Father, to your glory.
Amen. 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 Thank you, Lord. That was beautiful. Doing a double recording here. All right, what I'd like to do is have you turn, first of all, well, I hate to do this, but the Lord makes me do it because I don't like to talk about myself, but I know I've been in seminars where I'm wondering, who is that person up there talking to me? And where's she from and all of that? I'm out of Calvary Chapel, Costa Mesa from the beginning. I was born and raised there, so Papa Chuck came back in the 60s, and I was so excited to see all the hippies because that was my generation. And so I kind of grew up under Papa Chuck, and I miss him terribly. Then had three children. Oh, they're all grown now with children. Have 10 grandchildren and 4 great-grandchildren. Wow. I'm really actually an antique, BC, you know, before Chuck even came. So we loved him and we still love him. So been in children's ministry for 43 years now, I think, something like that. Started with neighborhood Bible clubs. My love is out on the streets with the children. The more children I can reach out away from the church, the more excited I get. I try to train wherever he sends me, all over the world now lately. I guess that's a little bit enough about me.
How many chairs do we need, maybe?
A few more chairs. I'm delighted that so many are coming in here. You are absolutely going to come on fire with this information. We all know how important relationships are. I love what John was teaching because it is so important to establish those relationships with the children. This will be valuable to you for your own children. How many of you have younger children, grade school or lower? Raise your hand if you yourself at home have young children, grade school or lower. How many of you have children that are the teens or above, even into adulthood? Oh, good. This is going to work there too. It's going to work anywhere. It'll work even between you and your boss and you and everyone else. It's just an amazing thing. This was started originally by a Dr. Charles Fay out of Denver, Colorado. You can go online to Love and Logic. It is amazing ministry. It's a father, son, wives, and a couple kids, and yet it's all over the world. He travels all over the United States with this teaching that he's been doing for a number of years. So I'm just a reporter. I originally heard about Love and Logic through Danny Silk. He's the youth pastor up in Northern California, and he did a series of 6 messages called Loving on Purpose, Loving Kids on Purpose. You can also go online and get his things, which will do a much more thorough job, but I managed to get Firefighters for Christ to run me off a bunch of these, so you're going to get one of Danny's. So some of what I'll be saying today you'll hear on here. Be sure and listen to these on the way home. You will just laugh all the way home and just have a delightful time. He is just so amusing. He's just delightful. And some of his stories are just, I'll tell a few of them in here. Now, because everybody always says, but Miss Darlene, what is the blank for this page? Love and Logic, Steps for Success with Challenging Kids. And I always forget to have all the blanks filled in. So let's do that first. Let's get by that. And then some of that will be explained. But right at number one, that one single page you have called Steps for Success with Challenging Kids. Yako, right up here, Yako. Right up here. I'm going to put her on the spot. This is my dear friend Yako, who is on staff at Sent Me the Story. If you have any questions about how to learn more about God's Story Project or Simply the Story, see this lady because she's on staff out there and there's other training through her. Number one, let's get going on that. Neutralize, there's a blank there. Neutralize arguments when dealing with a challenging child. And we've all got them, don't we? Whether they're our old teenagers at home or young people that are, even my son is 50 and I can get into arguments with him. Number two, sidestep unwinnable power struggles. There are power struggles in your class and power struggles between the children, power struggles between them, but sidestep them. We're going to show you how to do that. Number three, prove that your word is gold. Please say what you mean and mean what you say or don't say it. All right, just please don't say it and threaten and threaten and threaten or shh, 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 and don't do anything about it. Just, there are natural consequences that you're going to learn that are not punishment that you can use. But don't say it unless you mean it. You know, I could tell you a whole story on that, but I won't. Number four, let their poor decisions do the teaching. You're going to learn in this class how to allow them to make the choices, for them to fail, and learn by their decisions, either in the classroom or at home or anywhere else. Let their poor, don't rescue them from their poor decisions. Let them make them. Number five, when you have no control, apply the three E's of love and logic, and you'll see them there. Number one, we all know, example. They don't learn by what you say, but what you are and who you are. So modeling that example of Christ. Number two, experience. Their experience, not yours, through the result of their choices. That's how they're going to learn. How many of you have learned by failing? Yeah, I must be a genius. If you learn by failing, I'm going to be, I failed so many times. That's how they're going to learn. Let them fail. Empathy is the last one. Love is the motive. If you cannot love on these kids, please leave the ministry. Please. If you do not have God's love for these kids, please leave. And of course, we naturally don't have love for some of them. Some of them you just want to choke, right? I mean, you just... But you can still go to God and say, God, would you give me love for that kid? Will you let me understand that kid? And he'll do it every time. He has never failed me to give me love for a kid that is the most difficult child. Some of my most difficult ones are my most enjoyable ones today. Number six, when they are defiant and disruptive and nothing is working, go home and take care of yourself first. I do rapid response with Franklin Graham, Billy Graham's ministry. And that's one of the things you learn when you're out there. You remember 9/11, how the firemen and the first responders worked till they dropped almost dead? They didn't take care of themselves in between. You can do that in ministry. You can fail to take care of yourself. And when you have really hard, hard times with disruptive kids, go home, ask the Lord, take some time. Don't bail out, but take time for yourself to go back to the Lord and find out what you can do. Or just take a day off, or maybe a week off. You know, maybe you just need a time away from ministry for a little bit. But if you can't take care of yourself, and if you don't get filled in by Him, how are you going to flow out? So, and remember, number seven, remember that nothing, and I mean nothing, works without relationship with these kids. It's not going to work. It's just going to be in one ear and right out the other. If they don't know you love them and care for them. So, now you can put that other love and logic packet away. Don't look at it just yet, if you wouldn't mind. And that is when I went to see Dr. Charles Fay on November 16th. I just came on to him just this last November. Before that, my daughter gave me a series of six CDs by this Pastor Danny Silk called Loving Kids on Purpose. And he was trained by this Dr. Charles Fay. So I'm going to give you a few things of the other six that you're not going to get on this one. I wish I could have given you the whole six packet, but I'm not that wealthy. What does Jesus say about obedience? If you what? If you love me, you will obey me. So we obey Jesus because we love him, not because he's going to hit us over the head, right? Some people obey him because they're afraid they're going to get hit over the head. The problem comes, that's when we have learned to control through fear of punishment. How many children have, I taught my kids that way. If they didn't obey, I spanked them, right? I was a spanked mom because my dad did that for me, and I never spanked them out of anger, but it was punishment. Or into their room, or take away a privilege. It was punishment. But what happened when they got away from me? Did they always obey when I wasn't looking? Do you always obey unless there's a black and white cop behind you? Do you always obey the speed limit? It's fear of punishment, which we use so much. But perfect love casts out fear, the scripture says. How do you relate to God? Two ways. Either fear of punishment, if I don't do it right, God's going to punish me. And some Christians have that teaching. You know, the legalism. God's going to hit me over the head. But a love relationship is grace and mercy, right? So, since God is spirit, and where the spirit of the Lord is, there's freedom, somehow we have learned to live in this legalism with children, even, and with each other. You can't do that. You're not to do this. Yes or no, you know. If children grow up in an environment, and so many of them do, I raise mine, of punishment only when you're around, they're not necessarily going to do it when you're not around, right? So somehow we've learned being a Christian in this society is about behavior compliance. That childhood is about a compliance only, obedience, obedience, obedience. That's the way I learned. You know, I'm supposed to obey mom. But God is into relationship and love, and out of that love will flow obedience. God gives us free will, doesn't he? What did he do in the garden? Did he give Adam and Eve a choice and free will? Did he take that choice and put it way up on a mountain far away from the center of the garden? No, right dead center, didn't he? To give them a choice. We must train our children by their choices in serious limitations so that they'll learn to choose for themselves not to sin and not to fail, that they'll make that choice. How do we do that? Well, in the garden, man had one wrong choice, didn't he? Only one. He had everything else free, one wrong choice. We now have millions in this society today, this world today, millions of wrong choices, and only one right one. And that one right one is our Lord, to receive Jesus and love him. And we as parents and teachers operate so much on what fear of what they may do. We try to control our children, but children, guess what, are professional mistake makers. And we just expect them not to make the mistakes that we made, so we're going to teach them not to make the mistake. No, God's got to teach them. And their own flesh, their own poor choices need to teach them. God doesn't control you. You know that? He controls all things, but he doesn't control you. And neither does your spouse or your boss or your children or anyone else. Only you control you. You have the free will to choose what you're going to do. And if you never learn self-control, you're in deep trouble, right? Well, being out of control is a scary thing. Right? If you're in a car with a crazy driver that's doing 110 miles an hour and passing on the wrong side of the street, what's your reaction? You want what? You either want out or you want to get a hold of that wheel, right? And stop that car and get a hold of the wheel. So when your child decides just to be them and they're out of control, we intimidate them. Paul said to Timothy, remember what Paul said? You have not been given a spirit of fear from God, but of love and power and a sound mind, right? That power is in the love, not the punishment. That power, yet so many of us are trained by punishment. If I don't do it, I'm going to be in trouble. So what happens when they won't obey? What happens when they lie right to your face? Or say, I hate you, like my teenager did when he was a teen. He looked right at my face and says, I hate your guts. You know, he hated, you know, what do you do? We get fearful. And what is the big kahuna of the big thing that we're afraid of with kids? What would you say the thing that kids do that you really, really terrify you as a parent or as a teacher? Any ideas? What? Getting what?
Are you talking about like doing drugs?
Yeah, doing drugs is one of them. Any others? What do we get a fearful? What?
Rejection.
Yeah, they're going to reject us or reject God. Reject God even more.
Yeah.
How about disrespect? You know when your kids show you disrespect, like my kid said, I hate you? We're so afraid of their disrespect or what they might do. So when that happens, but fear casts out love. Now, Danny talks on this thing about, he gives an illustration of two trucks, being that he's the yellow truck and in control. You know, we parents that are in control. And they're the red truck. And we tell them not to do that, and if they do, we're going to yellow truck them. You know, we think Jesus wants to control me, and if I don't give him control, he's going to yellow truck me. You know, which is what we do. If you only see him as a great punisher, okay, I can't emphasize this enough. If you only see Jesus as a punisher, our whole view is skewed. God is, it's kind of like, yes, I know God is good, except when he's not mean. And kids have that perception of God. They do. We have to learn how to handle that freedom, that tons of freedom, choosing to obey by love and not punishment, to choose to build those relationships. So Danny gives lots of different examples of this, of how he trains his kids to do this. And one of them was when they were little at 4 and 6. I'm just going to give you an idea. He lets them make their choices. Now, most of us say, if you're going to send a 4-year-old and a 6-year-old to the room to go to bed at night, and they don't want to go to bed at night, this is a typical fight, right? Not with this. Hey, guys, it's room time, you say to your children. It's room time. I don't want to see you. I don't want to hear you till morning. Really, Dad? Can we have the light on? I don't want to see you. I don't want to hear you till morning. Your mother and I have had a hard day. We need some time alone to ourselves. Really? Can we read? I don't want to see you. I don't want to hear you till morning. So naturally, what do two boys do when they go into the bedroom and sharing the same bedroom? It doesn't very long be what? All kinds of noise, right? Hey, guys, I see you're not very tired. Yeah, right, Dad. Come on with me. Natural choices. Hey, Levi, here's a broom. You can sweep the garage. Whenever you're tired, let me know when it's time for bed. Tyler, he's on the back porch cleaning and screaming and crying and wailing big time. Hey, buddy, you cold? Yeah, I'm cold. Here's your jacket. And he walks with it. He's still crying, quiet down. Older boy, see, smarter. He's already gone to bed. He's decided he doesn't want to clean the garage with the floor, right? See, and he says, you come in and finally, Tyler's just screaming and yelling, and he finally quiets down. You tired, buddy? Yeah. Are you ready for bed? Yeah. And off he goes to bed. You hardly ever get to do that kind of fun stuff, but you could have fun with these kids by letting them. That's fun. Even though they learn from their mistakes, and they'll still test you at 13 and 15. His boys grew up, and they both had their own rooms, and they choose to go to Tay's room and make all kinds of noise. Hey, you guys tired? Done. So, there's lots of illustrations he gives you that are really cute that I'm going to share with you. But let's learn now this language of this empowerment. How do we really do this? It's a whole different language. Now, if you turn to the back of your notes, you'll see love and logic, loving kids on purpose, Danny Silk, and a list of love and logic phrases. That's a whole new language you're going to learn. A kid comes and plays, you say, I know. Probably so.
A lot of us don't have it yet.
Oh, you don't have it? Oh, you could write them down maybe. You're going to hear them on here. If you have this, did you get one of these? There's still more of these left, so that's good.
Thank you so much.
The language he uses are these phrases called, I know, probably so. For instance, when your kids say, that's not fair. How many of you have heard that out of a kid? That's not fair. I know. You know it's not fair? That could be. You're so stupid? Probably so. Oh no, what are you going to do? Nice try. What are you going to, how's that working out for you? No problem. These are phrases that you see there that are just wonderful. If you have a little one that's screaming, I'm all for having a good time. How many of you have had little ones screaming and yelling? Or kids, I'm all for having a good time. If you'd like to be with us, please stay. If not, you can certainly choose to go elsewhere. Far, far away. Front yard, backyard, bedroom, outside in the hall. I just did this out in the hall with my. I teach a public school campus, inner city Santa Ana, where they're really, it's a tough group of Latino kids, very tough, gang kids. And at fifth grade, they're in gangs. It's just so sad. But I just say, hey, we're all for having a good time in here in the Good News Club. You're welcome to go out in the hall. You know, you have a choice. You can stay here or go there. You know, you're so stupid. I know. Mm-hmm. Remember, I know I really am stupid, but you're welcome to do that. So we're going to go through a couple, I'll give you a couple other illustrations of what he illustrates. For instance, you have to plan on these things. You have to figure, you know, in dealing with them. Let's look at some sound bites. Go to the Love and Logic November 16th page there. It says sound bites. Okay, we're going to go through some sound bites that Dr. Charles Fay, he's going to come back to California, by the way. You will find him online. This is his magazine. And this course I took called Love and Logic that I just took last November is in a booklet like this. This is copyright, so I couldn't give it to you, but it's like 8 a.m. to 2 in the afternoon. He'll be back in California soon, I hope. I paid $99 for this class. I would have given $500 what I learned and what the effect of what I'm having on my kids. My grandchildren, I just can't believe it. They said, Grandma, you're so stupid. I don't want to hear that again. I know. Probably so. They don't want to hear it. What are you going to do? Oh, no. What are you going to do? Okay, to give you an illustration, say you're trying to train kids to be responsible in the classroom, and let's say the typical thing. Your child has arrived at the age where they can make their own lunch, right? So you get all the stuff and the goodies and you say, okay, now mom's through making lunches, you're going to make the lunch today, okay? And you're going to take your lunch to school and be responsible because you're old enough to do that. Oh, love that at first, right? Mm-hmm. And then make all the lunches and get. But the day comes when Susie forgets her lunch and there it is on the kitchen counter. So they know what's going to happen, right? Mom, I'm down at school, can you bring me my lunch? What? Lunch? Where? You know, the one on the counter. Oh, that one in the pink bag. Yeah, you're going to bring it, right? Oh, I'm sorry, Susie. I'm sorry. I'm not planning on going by the school today. It's hard to do.
Yeah.
You know, but what do we normally do? We go to school and say, I don't have time for this. Why does she be responsible? And you're thinking, sorry, I don't have time to go to school. So Susie says, Mom, you've got to. You just can't do that. I'm going to starve. I don't think so. I think you're highly intelligent, Susie. I think you can solve this problem. No, I can't. Mom, you've got to bring me my lunch. She's got all my good stuff in it. I know. But I might starve.
Probably so.
I know you could figure this out. No, I can't. Mom, you got to give. Well, you know, I've been around a while, Susie, and I have maybe an idea. Maybe you could go to the lady in the office and ask her, what do children do when they forget their lunch? I'm not going to go to her. She's me. I can't. No. Mom, you're going to bring my lunch. No, Susie, I haven't planned on going to school today. Now, the school is less than a mile from our house. This takes a lot of courage and strength to say no to a child, whether it's a big thing or a little thing like that, mm-hmm. and let them learn by their experience. So Susie says, but you've got to. Well, I've got another idea. What's that? Well, you know, in the cafeteria, they have lots of leftover food. You could just go around and pick up. I'm not going to eat all the garbage. You better be kidding, Mom. You're mean. I know. I have one other idea.
What's that? I hope it's better than the other two.
Well, you could ask a friend to share lunch with you. I'm not going to ask Stephanie to share her lunch with me. Mom, when my lunch is right there, and it's only a few blocks away, you're mean. I know. You know what? I know you're highly intelligent. I know you're going to solve this problem for yourself. Click. Guess what happens to Susie? She comes home that day and Mom thinks she's going to be madder than a hatter at me. She's going to hate me. She comes in happy, goes into her room. Hey, by the way, how'd lunch go? Oh, Steph and I had lunch together. We were fine. She solved it herself. You just saved yourself. Same thing in the classroom. Same thing. You let them solve the problem. Let's look at some sound bites from this. Look at the soundbite. Love is the only long-term motivator. We've established that one, right? There will never, ever be enough rewards or consequences or techniques to get challenging kids to want to behave and learn if we are not first developing that relationship like John taught us. If you don't start giving relationships with these kids, you're not going to get it. I love the principle. I think we'll get to it eventually, snowflake principle, but I'll show you. When someone starts to push your button, how many of you had kids push your button or a friend push your button? Just go brain dead. Just pretend you didn't hear it. When they find out that it doesn't work, you know why kids challenge you? Do you know why they keep at you? Why? Why does a kid keep after that one button that he knows is going to get you? Because, and a teenager, why? Because it works. They get under your skin, they win, because they know that they're in a power struggle with you and they're going to win. But if you're not afraid of their disrespect anymore, and you let it doesn't get to you, they will self-correct. My oldest son said, self-correct, they'll do it every time. Practice a benevolent monarchy, powerful and loving at the same time. Don't be afraid to be powerful, but be very, very loving. Be powerful in that you control the situation, not them. When somebody has a fit or a meltdown, when you say no, how many of you have said no to a kid and they really had a meltdown?
Oh, yeah.
I've got three autistic grandsons, and they are good at meltdowns. Mm-hmm. And it's amazing. But lots of times when you say no, they really need to hear no. Don't be afraid to be powerful and say no to a kid. Reasoning with an angry, arguing person is like fighting a fire with gasoline. Please don't do it. Don't even get there. Don't go there. Just go break. Just walk away. Try, I love you too much to argue, and then simply walk away. I love you too much to argue. Don't say anything and walk away. Now, that next soundbite underneath that one says, plug the holes before you launch the boat, i.e., plot your strategy. Figure out a way. Go to the Lord and say, Lord, what can I do for this setup to try this? For instance, teenage girl comes into class, or in this case, she came out from her bedroom to go to the mall with mom, and she looked pretty much very voluptuous, just beginning, and low cut. Thai food, looked pretty much like a prostitute. Okay, I mean, she was just the heavy, I'm becoming to see teenager like that, you know, heavy everything. And she goes, Mom, I'm ready to go. And Mom takes one look at her. Now she's ready for Mom to just go, you know. And Mom says, oh, when are we supposed to be there? 15 minutes. I'm going to meet Sally there in 15 minutes. Okay, well, let me go get ready. Mom goes in the bedroom, and Mom has some revelation wear of her own. And she seemed a little bit more voluptuous than her daughter, and she comes out with the high boots and the heavy makeup and the hair ratted back and forth and looking up, and her daughter, what are you doing? I'm not going anywhere with you like that. You're that stupid. She says, well, if I can go to the mall with you like that, then you should be able to go to the mall with me. I mean, after all, let's go. And she picks up things. Mother! Stop! You can't. You're not serious. You're not going to the mall like that. I said, yes, I am. So what do you think the daughter does? She goes straight to her bedroom and comes back with the most modest clothing she ever had on her life. Choices. That's a great. Is that a great plan? I mean, that mom thought that out through on how to handle that situation by her choice. You have a choice to go like that and me looking like this, or you can make another choice. The more times you can figure out choices for your kids, the better. Figure out a choice that you can give them, right? I'll tell you another one, because they're so fun. You don't get to have this much fun with kids very often. Daughter doesn't, this is a typical one you hit at home and also other places. Child doesn't want to do the dishes. Mom nags daughter to do the dishes every night. Become a battle, right? So mom goes to dad, your daughter won't do the dishes. It's the one chore she has, she won't do the dishes. He says, okay, I'll take care of that. And he goes in and does the dishes. What are you doing? He says, now mother's mad at him as well as she's mad at the daughter. I'll take care of it, says Danny. So he does the dishes and goes in. His daughter says, I understand you don't like doing the dishes very much, huh? No, I don't. I said, I'll tell you what. You have a choice. You know, on Saturdays when I clean the chicken coops, now they live out in the country with about 38 chickens. All right? And I clean on Saturday. Would you like to do that? And I'll do your dishes every night. Yeah, Dad, that's great. Okay. So when Saturday comes around, she wants to go to the mall. No time to do the cleaning of the chickens. Dad's been doing the dishes there every night. And Mom's saying, you are letting her off the hook. Yeah, I'm taking her to the mall today. What? She's supposed to do the chicken coop. I know, but she's promised that she'll do it tomorrow. And you're going to get away with that. Is God good? He lets her do it the next day. And it's got good. It pours down rain. I mean, it's coming down in buckets. There's nothing but all kinds of chicken, you know what, and mud and everything else. Whatever he gets, here's your city slicker, here's your slickers, here's your gold galoshes, and out she goes in the rain for an hour and a half. Cleaning, she comes in with straw and everything. I mean, you know, she's a mess. And she goes into her room and says, whatever, next night. Time to do the dishes. Hun, I'll be right in, says Dad. Out comes the daughter running out of her bedroom. Never mind, Dad, I'll be doing the dishes. You see what an easy way? Let them plan. Plan your scope. And you can plan that in the classroom, too. Start thinking in terms of how you can do this or you could do that. Okay? So if you always try to manage and control them, you're going to be perspiring. You see that sound bite there? Managers perspire, a leader inspires. Yeah, and you won't see the fruit until you get to the emotional root of the kid, too. You need to understand the kid of where he's coming from. How many times we thought, oh, that's why he's behaving like he is, because you've talked to him and you know. When you don't know what to do or you're too angry to think straight on the next one, delay the consequences. You know, when you just don't know what to do, you're just too angry to even think straight about the whole thing, just delay it and go back to the Lord that week and find out what the Lord has. He'll give you those ideas. And when it's over, it's over. You know, when you have a bad thing with a kid, let it go. Give it to the Lord and let it go. Don't let the enemy drive you out of ministry just because you fail. We're all mistake makers, right? How many of you, I mean, we've all made mistakes with the kids. But God is good. Remember, you don't have to answer every question they have either. Okay, just because they answer a question, you don't have to answer. You can just say, oh, I'll think about that. Or I'll get back to you on that. Without empathy, though, there is no love and logic. This is not going to work if you say, if you use one of the things the kid says, so that's not fair, and you say, I know. They can tell. They can smell cynicism. Mm-hmm. Don't be cynical. I know. Just answer quietly. When you're using a word like probably so, they're going to tell the difference between that and probably so. I am stupid. You know, just empathize. If you don't have empathy, it's not going to work. Because anger, and I've been there, anger and frustration or sarcasm on my part make the problem mine. Whereas empathy allows it to be on the child. When you empathize, like God, what does God do? He lets you make a mistake. Does he hit you over the head? No, he lets you fail. And then he comes alongside and says, here, what can I do to help? And that's what you can do. You can let them fail and then come along and help them. Every time I tell a stubborn person what to do, I hand them my power. If you try to argue with a stubborn person, you're just handing them your own power. You're just getting into that argument that's never going to go away. Tell them what you're willing to do or to allow instead, okay? What you're willing to do and what you're allowed to say. Don't argue with them. Just tell them the choices. If you have one really difficult child, don't do anything else but to neutralize that child temporarily. That must be your focus. Sometimes some kids simply need to be in someplace else so you can teach the rest. There are some kids, as you know, that you have done everything that you know, and then sometimes you just need to neutralize them. You need to take your partner that's in the class, take them outside, send them to the children's ministry office, whatever. There's just something. But you don't give up on them, and you come right back and loving them the next week. And I'll give you some cute love things that we've come across. Consequences gain their power because of relationship. Because of your relationship and they know you love them, that consequence gains power in their life. Actually experiencing the other person's feelings. This is his definition of empathy, which I really liked. Actually experiencing the other person's feelings. Asking God, how are they feeling? Where are they coming from? If I were in their shoes, try to find out why they are who they are. Sometimes they'll share, sometimes they won't. Letting go of trying to make the other person different. See, that was my big mistake. I wanted to make all my kids like me. I don't understand why they can't do it the way I do it. Because I was a control freak with my kids. I tried to control them. I was raised by a police officer, and my brother's a police officer, and man, you towed the mower, you got to punish, and I, total control. But it doesn't work, because when I was away from my dad, I did pretty much what I wanted to do, which you do as a kid. So letting go of trying to solve the problem is all under empathy. Just ask God, and he'll show you how to get. How many of you have heard all about relationships up to here? But in this haven't we heard it everywhere? Almost everywhere we go in the conference. In dealing with defiance, create a setup where you have complete and total control, like the mom who had complete control, or the chicken coop idea. You have the control. You've done a setup, and then you pray like crazy that they'll fail. That's what you want them to do, is stumble, so that you can come along and help them. You get to do the fun stuff. Just set a simple, forcible limit and pray like crazy that their choices go south, because then you can come alongside and help them. And you can say, oh no, what are you going to do now? Oh no, it's one of the wonderful ones. Oh no, what are you going to do now when they fail? And let them figure out for themselves what they're going to do now. Don't give them the solution. Then simply say, no problem, we're going to work this out. I know God's going to show you what to do. You know, he's real good at that. Let that empathy and the consequence do the teaching in the classroom. And eye contact is so important. Look right eye to eye with the kids, right in their eye. Oh no, what are you going to do now, April? How's that working out for you? So they find out. Most often, you know, because if you do the other, if you tell them what to do, what happens when you tell somebody what to do, especially a rebellious child? They'll do what? Just the opposite, right? I know I always did. My mom controlled me that way. Darlene, you can't eat your peas. I hated peas. I know you can't eat them. I'll show her. I ate them just to show her. Wrong way to teach your kid. You're teaching them rebellion when you do that. Then do a healthy exam of yourself. I really think this is so important. We need to go before the Lord and simply ask ourselves, are there people or other people or kids that want to get away from me, and why? When they see you coming, do they want to get out of the classroom? Is there any of that or feeling about that or other people? I know for a long time, I'm such a talker. We teachers have a tendency to be talkers. And I used to talk people's arms off, on and on and on, like I'm doing now, kind of. And, you know, there were people that would see me coming across the quad, and they'd turn the other way. Because Darlene would talk and talk and talk. And you've all run across those people that just monopolize. It was a long time for the Lord to get that out of me, to recognize it. Does my classroom or my home meet my students' or my children's needs better than becoming isolated, or even joining a gang of peers, which we have at the Santa Ana School? If a child is isolated, goes in the corner of the classroom, doesn't want to participate, or if when he comes home from school, he heads into the bedroom, wants to be away, you got problems right there, you know that. So you've got to get that relationship going back on, that love relationship going. And you have to practice, practice, practice. Now, John taught some of this in his class, but I call this the snowflake principle. Practice the snowflake principle. What is that? Well, you know how snowflakes are tiny, and they come down, and what happens when they come down a lot? They build up. Every time you look at a child and you compliment them and you find something about them that they love, and I'll tell you something about grade school kids, they love their shoes. Oh, you've got a new pair of tennis shoes on today. I just love your shoes. They're so white. What are you doing? They just think that's wonderful. Or, I noticed, Johnny, that you answered that question. One compliment on top of another. You can never out-compliment them enough. Just, and you know one of the best things to do to make that kid just absolutely love you and adore you? Plan telling another teacher about Johnny and make sure Johnny overhears it. Have you ever had someone talk about you in a positive way and you happen to hear about it? What does that do? You gotta be careful not to believe your own press. But that is a wonderful way to build up a child's image and to know that he's really loved by you. You're talking about him to someone else. You're complimenting him on his hair. This green hair has been wonderful because we've got a color hair thing going with the kids in us. And it's a gang thing now. It's a fun thing. And even the Calvary Chapel Costa Mesa, by the way, the girls are all, we ladies are all doing our hair. Colleen is one of our teachers that just got through cancer, and you know how you lift your hair and it all grows back, it all grew back white, and she's got hot pink here, and I've got green here, and we've got turquoise over there. We're having a ball, and it's an amazing way to identify with the children. You know, like Paul, I figured if Hudson Taylor could grow a pigtail and wear Chinese food to Chinese clothes to identify with the Chinese, you just find a way to identify with them, and then just compliment them, compliment them, compliment them. For every thing that snowflakes are very tiny, but they do make many of your comments, but many of them. Notice all that little stuff. Save the consequences for the big stuff. And it's okay to take care of yourself, like I said earlier, okay? Please take care of yourself. But if you're worn out and just burn out and tired, then don't feel bad about taking time off. Just, I noticed if Pastor, any of you went to hear Mike from Johnny and Friends on juggling, too much juggling, dropping the ball. We can get so overloaded in ministry that we are just exhausted because we get too busy. And so learn how to say no and to take care of yourself. Early conditioning sets a template for the rest of life, he put in there. And again, I'm just a reporter for Dr. Charles Fay here. It says birth to 1 year is all children from birth to 1 year is a child learns this template. I am loved and I can trust people. If a child is taken care of when he's tiny, he learns he's loved and he can trust that mommy or whoever's taking care of him. The second year, all of a sudden, I don't always get what I want and I have to learn to submit to authority. And so when little 2-year-old is having a temper tantrum and not going to stay, you know, just gonna scream and have a meltdown, oh, I'm sorry, I know you can solve this. We're all for having fun here. You can go away. Far, far away. I don't want to hear you. I don't want to see you. And so what is that little one? He continues to have a temper tantrum, right? The 2-year-old. So you pick them up, kicking and screaming, and you take them far, far away, and you put them anytime you want to come and join mommy, you're welcome. He's screaming away, screaming in your back here. Pretty soon they come back out, right? And they're still mad. And they're still cranky. You say, oh, I'm sorry. We're all for having fun in here. We can go back. Don't you touch me! That's a typical 2-year-old. I can put myself in my room. Don't you touch me. And into the room they go. Now this 2-year-old's in this room and he's singing. She's out here. I'm in here. I'm all by myself. Is this such a good idea? Even a 2-year-old can these are smart critters. You know, these are very intelligent little beings. They can figure it out on their own. They don't have to be told. They just have to suffer the consequence of their actions. You know, I love parents that'll trust the Lord so much. We had a teenager in Newport Beach, where I'm from, want to sail around the world on a sailboat by herself. Would you let a 16-year-old sail around the world in a sailboat by herself? Those parents did. And they guided her, and they knew where she was, and they were in telephone conversations with her, and they kept in trusting the Lord all the way. And that girl got into some trouble. But she made it, and God rescued her, and she learned. You've got to have, we either have faith in God or we don't. And of course, that one may not be, you know, I mean, that's a scary one. But There's so many things we can let our other adult children even choose to do. I'm always rescuing my adult children, and I have to break that habit now and let them fail and then come alongside and help them. So if you've been a control parent like me, I don't want to skip the tattlebox thing. Have a tattlebox. How many of you have tattle problems in your classroom? They always want to tattle on each other. Most kids do. So I just have them write it out and put it in the tattlebox. And I tell them, I'll see the tattlebox and I'll look it over for you. For the little ones, they can't write, right? And I tell them, the little ones, you can tattle all you want as long as it's a good time for me and as long as you tattle about yourself. I would love to hear about yourself. And I just tell them that God is very forgiving and, you need to forgive them and let it go. Miss Darlene, you're not very... I don't want to hear it. I'm not a police officer. God says for you to forgive them, but you can write it out and put it in the tattlebox and I'll pray about it for you. If you've been a control parent, say, I need to, this is a, if you have up to this point been a control teacher or a control parent, you do need to go to your kids and apologize, is what I had to do too. I need to say something like this: I need to apologize to you and seek your forgiveness. I've been trying to micromanage your life and control you all this time. You are the one who needs to decide what you are going to do with your life, and from now on, you call the shots. I believe in you. Please let me know what I can do to help you. Okay, and let them learn. Just let them learn. Develop a mantra. Build them up in their area of strength. All kids have an area of strength. Look for it in the classroom, that area. Build them up in that area. I understand you're really good at math. Would you like me to come over and help you with the math? I love that. That's what you said about John. Go help them where they are, whatever their area of strength. Support that. Turn it into a career. Motive is highly motivated by self-concept, and good character is nothing is more motivating. So it can be, by the way, good character in children can be developed by chores without pay. Yeah. We paid our kids way too much, my boys. You know, we'd say, go out and weed the garden. They'd work 20 minutes and Doug would give them 10 bucks. Who gets $10 an hour for 20 minutes? Especially back then in the 70s. You know, it was crazy. You know, we just overpaid them and we just, you know, you can develop good character by not paying that. They're part of this family. They need to participate as part of the family. I'm not going to do that. I know. And then you start giving them choices. All right? Serving those who are less blessed. There's nothing better than to encourage your young people to go on short-term mission trips, even if it's just up the street to help a lady in your neighborhood, or if it's across the street to feed a dog or anything service. Encourage your children in Sunday school class to go out and serve. Jesus served. And you talk about developing good character. There's nothing better. Have any of you ever taken any children on mission trips? Any of them? I'm hoping to take my youngest autistic one on a mission trip to Africa this next summer. That's if the Lord continues to open that door. But it's probably the best thing you can do is take a kid on, even if it's up the street. You know, you don't have to go all the way to Africa. We go right up the street past Calvary Chapel Costa Mesa to inner city Santa Ana. All Latino kids. First year we were there. A drive-by shooting right in front of the school where our fourth grader lost his older brother. Simply because the older brother came out, they were bulleting the house as the car went by, and the older brother came out with a gun shooting back at they killed him right on the spot. And the next year, we had a father kill a mother in front of the child. I mean, this is tough stuff what these kids are living with in this day and age. You have no idea of what they're living with. Many of my kids say, please pray for my daddy to get out of jail. You know, please pray that I can get my mommy back with me. It's just on the prayer request. The kids are hurting so bad. They've got so much fear. And teach them that God has not given them a spirit of fear. And another thing I teach them that I hope that you guys do is the best thing you can do for a child other than all of this, which is wonderful, is to teach them who God is. God once told me very clearly, child, teach them who I am. So when they, and Chuck used to say this all the time, when you can't figure out why God is doing what he's doing in life, go back to who he is and what you do know about him. When you don't know why, go back to the who. And so I teach them the attributes of God, and I just use the alphabet. A is for almighty, and B, he's beautiful. C, he's my counselor. D, he's my deliverer. E, he's eternal. F, he's faithful. G, he's good. H, he's holy. I, immutable. J, just. K, kind. L, loving. And we go right through the alphabet. And we sing them to Friar Jaca. God is faithful, God is faithful. He always keeps his word. Do everything we can. And we do those every single week so that they know who he is, so that when they don't know the why, They need to know who he is, and so many of them don't. If you ask them to describe who God is, be interesting. Ask your Sunday school class or your class, who is God? How would you describe God? And they'll come up with all kinds. He's fine, he's good, you know. But they don't know. Omniscient, omnipotent, omnipresent. Those are great big giant. How many of you know that kids love supercalifragilisticexpialidocious words, right?
Right, right.
Mississippi, M-I-S-S-I-P-P, you know. They love words like that. Omniscient. They know more than their parents, you know. And I teach them big stuff about God. You know, that God had 12, he had Jacob and he had 12 sons, and they know, my kids know all the 12 tribes of Israel, because we sing them. Reuben, Simeon, Levi, Judah, Issachar, Zebulun. We sing everything to learn in a different part. But teach them who he is along with this, so that they can make the choices, because they know God is fair when they don't understand. And challenge them with, make them think. Love on them and make them think. You know, I know some of you have done this. I know you have, because you've been in children's ministry, and I know you could all of it tell me a story about how you got your kids thinking. And question them and find out what's going to happen. Do you know that we probably have, more than likely, the last generation? And God is looking for children who will stand up against this evil. I think God's judgments and warnings are coming against our sins and falling all around us. If we can see it right in our society, how are these going to stand unless we don't warn the children and prepare them? Prepare these kids for what's coming ahead. Ask them, hey, what would you do if you come to someone and say, is your God loving? And you say, well, if I ask all of you children, is God loving? What would you say?
Yes.
Is he also all-powerful?
Yes.
Okay, tell me this, boys and girls. If he's so loving and all-powerful, how can he allow that murderer to kill all those kids and never get caught? There's a man over there and he's killed at least a dozen kids. Is that loving? Well, he's either not loving or he's not all-powerful. Could he stop it? Yeah, you told me he's all-powerful. He could. What's your answer? Kids, how are you going to answer that? They're going to look at you just like you're looking at me. It's one of the big questions of our whole society. How can God... Yeah, but when you do all the attributes of God, he's also what? He's just. Is God just, boys and girls? Mm-hmm. Well, if he was fair, what is just? Being totally fair with everybody? Are we all guilty of murder? What did Jesus say? Yeah, we're all guilty. Are we all guilty of all those things? Well, to be totally just, he not only needs to wipe out that murder, he needs to wipe out all of us. Because we're all guilty if he's going to be totally just. But he gives us our mercy, because he's also merciful. And he's waiting. And he did the most loving, powerful, just, fair thing he could do when he came down and died on the cross. Give him an answer for these. Get these kids prepared for what's going ahead, to be able to stand up. Tell them missionary stories, how they stood up. Tell them some of these stories you're hearing from the Middle East of Christians dying for their faith. Because they may very well be required to die for their faith. Ask yourself, am I willing to die? How far am I willing to go when it gets tough around here? Mm-hmm. Brother Andrew, who had a tremendous ministry, too, if any of you knew Brother Andrew, anybody know Brother Andrew opened doors that took the Bible into the communists up here in Russia years ago, and then he was in the Middle East. He was just a little Dutchman, and he's now 94. But he often says, because he knows what real persecution is, he's lost many of his brothers and sisters to all kinds of torture. And he said, you know, in America, you in the West, he says, you do not know persecution, even though they're persecuting us some and maybe putting some of us in the courthouse and paying fines. He says, you know intimidation. But when I come here, said Andrew, and I find out that most of the church has gone underground and the real church is in the home underground, then I'll know persecution has started. Because we really don't, do we, Yeko? Yeko works in the third. We don't know persecution yet. We're not actually put in jail yet. But that may be coming, we don't know. But these kids are in that generation. We're awful close. So ask the Lord how to prepare those children for those big things. And ask your kids those kind of questions. Ask the Lord what you can do. Talk to them, win them over. You're going to have lots of fun listening to this thing. And where are we at? When is this one over? Three, I forgot. I lost track of time.
Character, never make a driving car free.
Was that where I left out? Yeah. Never make driving car free for a teen. Yeah, teens do not fear driving, but they do fear financial loss. And so you can make it where they're going to have to pay for it. They're going to. My grandson is getting to that age. He's 14. He's already saving for his 16-year-old driver's license, you know, in the car. And he's going to have to earn it himself. And they can. And then ask your kids if you can have a constructive nagging agreement. Nagging is simply no nagging. So you just say a constructive argument is one in which you're not argumentative, you're not nagging anymore. You promise that you're not going to nag him, he's not going to nag you, because you can give them one warning and that's it, or one choice. We're not going to nag. We're just going to say one choice and that's it. And talk about with others what's exciting and positive in the classroom. As the kids over here, I talked about that one. There's a book referral Charles Fay wrote called From Bad Grades to a Great Life by Charles Fay. This man, Dr. Charles Fay, if he comes here again, you'll definitely want to hear him. He has won the respect. He is a born-again Christian, but he has won the respect of all of our public schools. I went to this seminar, and there was a room of hundreds of people, principals, public school teachers, grandparents like me, Sunday school teachers, every conceivable type of and yet he is relating God's love into the public schools through techniques that work because they're God's techniques. And he doesn't have to say Jesus, he doesn't have to say, you know, and he could talk to principals, and he's changing his part of the world. And so if you ever have a chance to hear him, I really, like I said, I just did hear him this last November. The other thing I did just here in December, and that's what's going to be coming next workshop, I do want to tell you about it. I have to tell the Lord, Lord, enough. STS was wonderful, and he poured that into me. And then he poured all this love and logic understanding into me, and now he's poured digital cocaine into me. And that is, I don't know if any of you understand how bad digital, I think we all know the danger of gaming and digital and watching. And Brad, we came very close. Pastor Larry talked directly, and Matt talked directly to Brad Huddleston. He is a pastor, and then he worked for Focus on the Family, and he got into using technology huge wide, and we had him come to the Calvary Chapel Schools conference at Big Calvary Costa Mesa, where all the Calvary schools came together. And I just happened to be walking across the patio that day, and I heard him in the sanctuary, a few words in the sanctuary, boy, that sounds good, and I went in, and I was blown away by the statistics and the facts that he has about these little things that we carry in our pocket. Mm-hmm. And we look at home and the computer and the damage. And he's going to give you the chemical, scientific fact of all of that. And the next morning after I heard it, it just blew me away. It's shocking. You think you know that it's bad for us. You have no concept of just how bad it is. 2 hours on this thing is the same as taking, chemically in your brain, is the same as taking on a full line of cocaine. That's how much damaging, chemical damaging is occurring in your brain. And they've proven it scientifically, the dopamine, and he'll show you that. And he'll show you on this DVD today just exactly what you can do. He does give you solutions. They're not easy solutions, but he will give you solutions at the end of the DVD lab. I sent it to Pastor Larry, and he said, we've got to get him. And we tried and we couldn't, but next year maybe we'll have him live. And he did approve of a handout that we prepared for it. And so all I know is that I do not do computer. The Lord told me a number of years ago when computers started really ramping up, and my husband is a computer expert, and he worked with computers all the time, he said, don't touch it. And I said, Lord, don't touch it. I'm an addicted personality. I'm addicted to sugar. And I'm addicted to overeating, which can be really easy. I'd weigh 400 pounds if I let myself go. No lie. And I knew that if I got on the computer, I got on Facebook, I got all that stuff, I'd be on there all the time. But after hearing that video, which is next door this next hour, I looked at that. I walked the beach every morning with my mom. She's 97, by the way, and is still walking.
Awesome.
Living in her own home. No doctors, no meds at 97. She's amazing. And I looked at this thing and all the little apps, you know, that are there that I've already started to use. I was just going to use it as a phone. You know how that goes? And so I just do it like this, and I was going to hit the phone because I've heard it. I'm going back to analog. I'm going back to a flip phone. This thing has got me hooked. And I start to go like that, and the Lord says, no, stop. Learn to control it. Mm-hmm. Technology is not all bad. Look what God's doing with it. It's fabulous. And we're not going to get away from it anyway, right?
Sure.
We're in there. I mean, it's here. And in the last days, knowledge will increase. But learn to control it. You'll get some good ideas on how to control it from him. And he'll scare you to death, but he'll also give you solutions. And you won't be too scared. But don't let the spirit of fear control you. And T teach your kids not to let this control you. And unfortunately, our schools, you know, our schools have all gone digital.
Yes.
My own kids are all they're all learning.
Okay. And they're in front of the screen at school, they're in front of the screen when they get home.
My daughter has finally gone to, they get 1 hour of screen, any kind of screen. And that's usually homework. They have to do it on screen at home, and that's it. It's hard. Yes, they complain.
Really?
I know. Mom, you're so stupid, you're unfair. I know.
Probably so.
That's what she says. Don't say that to me again. I know you can figure this out. And they're beginning to self-correct themselves. They will, especially after they watch something like this. And you can get a copy of this DVD, you know, by going to their ministry. And it's called Digital Pokemon. So I really highly recommend that. I know you. There's so many good ones next hour, too. Yes. I hate to take away from anybody else, especially John.
I'm already doing
those. Yeah. So anyway, if you can't get it, you can send away. He is online. Brad Huddleston is his name. bradhuddleston.com or digitalcocaine.com. You can probably get it online, but you'll take the time to hear it while you're here. You know how many of us wish we want to watch this TV, but we never have time to watch it, whatever. So anyway, that's pretty. Do we have any questions about any of this, or how we might apply it, or any questions how you might use it? Any at all? No? No questions? Yes, what?
But I guess he's four years old and really gets his way a lot at home.
Yes.
And he's been coming to church for a while, so it's not that he doesn't know the routine or anything like that, but he wants to cry or, you know,